Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to The Good, The Dad and The Ugly, the podcast by dads, for dads, and for anyone else interested in the topic of fatherhood. We think becoming a dad is a pretty fucking big deal. Maybe the biggest deal you'll ever go through as a man. The problem is that blokes are not always that good at talking about stuff and sharing their feelings. So we're here to redress the balance. But don't worry, it's not bloody Mumsnet. This is blokes talking about stuff. Important stuff. Dad stuff. The good and the ugly sides of it. I'm Seth, a first-time dad, and I'll be joined by my pal, Jamie, a soon-to-be dad, along with a different guest on each episode. And this is essentially our month-by-month account of what we're going through and what's on our minds as we foray into these unfamiliar, joyful, and often choppy waters. Choppy waters. Choppy waters.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is episode 3 of The Good, The Dad and The Ugly, the fatherhood podcast. As ever, Jamie's here.
Hey.
We're here again in your studio.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, it's. We said last time that this was my studio, but I got a bit in trouble with work because this is not my studio, it's my work studio. Green Rock, for all your production and TV editing needs, Green Rock, Heart Fitzrovia, come visit.
So, can I just say, you're looking very well rested.
You say that, but I have a cat which wakes me up at 5:30 every single morning by jumping on my head for it to be fed, which doesn't bode well for fatherhood, I reckon, because we haven't been able to... We're basically at the mercy of this cat. This cat dictates mine and Nat's lives by demanding to be fed at 5:30. We haven't trained it well, and I'm now worried that our parenting skills are kind of... aren't going to be up to...
Well, I can reassure you to some extent, because I can... say for sure that a baby, a newborn baby at least, is not going to jump on your head in the morning.
Mm. That's true, but it will cry.
Yeah, it will cry. Yeah, that's true. Actually, we've been quite lucky because Eliza, it turns out, and I should touch wood here, she's been quite a good sleeper up to now, so.
Yeah, but how old is she?
She is almost 8 weeks.
Right.
So I'm basically a dab hand now. I feel like I should get some kind of award.
I swear the amount of people I hear at this sort of stage going, yeah, we cracked it. Our baby just sleeps. And then it gets to about 3 months and they go, yeah, our baby just isn't sleeping. I wouldn't get too cocky.
No, I have that in the back of my head. So every time I say Eliza's a good sleeper, I do that touch wood thing.
That is actually the sound of him touching wood.
Yeah, hang on.
No way. In that sense.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Come on. This is a family-friendly podcast.
Yeah.
So, and but you've had your 20-week scan
we have,
as well.
Yeah, 20-week scan.
How? Yeah, because I as I've said this before, like I found all of the scans really terrifying.
Yeah, no, I didn't.
Because so let me just explain why. Because I mean, maybe this is just like sort of a pessimism that other people don't have. And there was, there was no reason for us to think that there was anything wrong. But every time I was in that room with the machine going and stuff, and you know, the checking for the baby's toes and all that kind of stuff, I was like terribly worried that they were going to say, oh yeah, like there's something wrong.
Yeah, I guess there was. I guess there was that moment where you kind of, where you just kind of wait for them to go, oh yeah, everything's fine, and you go, oh, okay, cool. I don't know. I found the scans really kind of. I wanted to be more overwhelmed. I'm not saying they're underwhelming, because that would be wrong. They were they were a big thing, but they weren't.
They were whelming.
They weren't whelming. Yeah. That were, no, I guess they were to a certain extent. They were whelming. They weren't underwhelming. They weren't overwhelming. Yeah. They were just whelming, I think. But yeah, I just found it. I mean, it was. I didn't cry. Nat really wanted me to cry, and I didn't cry.
So we're going to kind of move on shortly, but before we do, I just wanted to kind of get some official business out of the way, which is to say that if you like what we're doing with this podcast and you want to help us out, it would be really, really great if you could go onto iTunes and subscribe, obviously, and rate and review the show, and spread the word by sort of telling your friends and stuff.
Yeah, and Twitter. And we now have a Twitter account and a Facebook account, and you can find both of them at Good Dad Ugly on both Facebook and Twitter. So come say hi, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Just on the subject, actually, because it's occurred to me now, yeah. Jamie's very hot on checking out who's looking at our podcast where and stuff.
Statistics.
And you can't really tell whether it's Jamie's mum or my mum, but you can tell where people are. And we've got like a remarkably high level of listenership in Sudan.
Yeah, the second highest, behind the UK, our second highest listenership is Sudan. So big up Sudan.
Big up Sudan. Okay, so with that out the way, I'm going to crack on and introduce our guest for this episode.
Who is your daddy and what does he do?
So that's Jerry Bujo. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, guys.
I'll kind of give a little introduction to Jerry because, you know, he's an esteemed guest. Jerry is an investment banker. Although for the
sorry, wanker. No, I just said
well, like, I was going to say, you spoiled the joke.
Oh,
I was
no,
going
to
say,
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, this is a joke that that Tom furnished me with, which is I was going to say, for the purposes of today's chat, we might say an investment wanker.
Yeah,
and then obviously,
and why is that?
Well, then I was going to introduce the fact that, you know, Jerry's here partly to talk about IVF.
Yeah,
and obviously, I'm assuming that there's some auto kind of stimulation that goes on in.
Well, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. No, there very much is.
Definitely
I mean, before any of this, I always used to say investment banker wanker anyway, because it's...
But now it's factually correct.
Yeah, now, yeah. I mean, it's always factually correct, actually, right, yeah. I mean, since about the age of 12, but...
So, yeah, so I've kind of given part of the game away. So Jerry is the father of a daughter, Uma, via IVF, and also you are a stepdad as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah.
First question, what's it like being a stepdad?
Yeah, it's great, to be honest. I mean, the thing is, I guess when people say stepdad, I think people have this idea of, you know, being the stepfather of a kid who's maybe like in their teens or something and coming in. And the thing with me is that my stepdaughter, I've kind of been with since she was one. So I think that definitely changes that dynamic, I think.
So what's her name?
Sorry, Elise.
Elise,
yeah, sorry. Elise, she's 4.5. She's almost 5, actually. And she's just, yeah, a very special kid. And I think one of the great things about being a step parent is there's not as much kind of responsibility, really. You can be a lot more kind of carefree as a parent, but obviously you love that kid. And but I mean, yeah, it's just it's a different dynamic, but it's very
rewarding.
Yeah.
So just to clarify as well, you were a stepdad first before you had Uma, your biological daughter.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do both Uma and Liz call you dad, or is there...
No. So Elise calls me Jerry, and she really knows, and this was always important to us, obviously, but she knows who her father is, and she's coming to terms with, you know, what the whole family dynamic's about. I mean, I'm quite lucky in a sense, because my wife has her own stepfather, who she's very close to as well, and so I guess Elise sees that whole dynamic already in her mother. It doesn't make her feel like this isn't that normal, actually. So, you know, and both her, you know, her stepfather and her father get on very well, and so it's actually quite a positive family, like modern family environment that she's got, and it's the same, I like to think, in our situation as well. So it's
important. I guess it's really important if you're going to have, you know, let's say like a slightly kind of unconventional like family like that you do kind of get on with people and make an effort to get. Do you get on with Elise's dad?
Yeah He's a great dad, really, and he kind of sees every week, and I mean, the thing is, as soon as, you know, kind of kids come into it, everything else goes out the window in terms of, like, you know, your adult kind of apprehensions or whatever else, and agendas, I guess. Like, there's this one story I was where, you know, once we were picking up Elise after she was with her dad, and you know, it was quite early in my wife and I's kind of relationship. It was now my wife, but so a bit, you know, we're always polite and everything else, but I was standoffish a little bit, and Elise kind of called me over and kind of grabbed me by the neck and grabbed the father by the neck and just kind of pulled us both together, kind of thing. And it's weird how she kind of sensed it, I guess, but she definitely did. And so,
how old was she at that point?
She was maybe two, maybe
oh, wow.
Very young. I mean, yeah, not even two, baby. And so it's kind of weird how kids are, you know, they have this.
Yeah,
this
she gets it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing. I now that I've got Uma, I'm noticing a lot of differences as well, obviously, as you kind of naturally do. And they couldn't be further apart from one another. I mean, it's quite hard because Uma's only 15 months, so yeah. She's still developing her character, obviously. But they are very different. Elise kind of dives, she kind of dives in the deep end kind of thing. She's not scared of anything, and she's very, very sociable. And Uma's a bit more kind of she's a bit more reserved, exactly.
So would you say there's like a difference between the way you kind of see your two girls?
There definitely is. I mean, one of the things is that because obviously I'm not Elise's father, but because she's an older sister to Uma, I can see already that, you know, Uma looks up to Elise a lot, and she gets stuff from Elise that neither her mother or I could give her, really. And she when she walks to her room, Elise makes Uma laugh like neither her mum or I can. It's really quite special, like she's quite sweet. And just because of that in itself, it makes me, you know, want to protect and love, you know, Elise, you know, all the more kind of selfishly, because I know that she's, because, you know, if you're
a good influence, a good thing for,
exactly,
Uma.
Yeah, as a sibling, right? Yeah. And siblings are almost more important, I mean, you can't, like, than parents, because they're there longer, if you see what I mean. And yeah, you know, they and so she, you know, they're like friends as well. And so, because I obviously want the best for Uma, it makes me want only the best for Elise as well, just so I know that she's as happy as possible, and she's, you know, giving that kind of guidance to her youngest, especially because they're very different, you know, girls. So it's a different dynamic, but it makes me look over you know, Elise kind of equally, but in that kind of different way, if that makes sense.
So getting on to kind of, you know, areas that are obviously, you know, a bit more sort of sensitive and stuff.
Yeah.
When you got together with your now wife, Sass, you knew at that stage that she wouldn't be able to conceive in a conventional way.
Yeah, yeah.
So was that an issue for you?
No, not at all. No. I mean, the thing is, it's because it was Elise, you know, and Elise is something, like I keep saying, she's such a great kid, that it just made it seem totally kind of doable, normal in a way. And so I wasn't worried or...
I mean, because it's quite a big thing.
It's
if someone,
thing.
When you meet someone and they tell you, I guess, that they you know, they can't necessarily conceive in a, you know, in a conventional way, to kind of...
You're right. It is, actually. It is. And I never thought that I wouldn't conceive naturally. I just didn't cross my mind. I guess you have these preconceived ideas of how you're going to conceive, maybe how become a father or whatever else. And that kind of goes out the window, actually. And and it was all... I knew nothing about IVF. And it was all a big kind of learning, you know, learning experience.
Yeah, because I expect that quite a lot of the people listening won't really know that much about what IVF involves.
Yeah.
So perhaps you can kind of break it down.
Yeah, I mean, it's really quite a real kind of miracle. You hear that kind of thing, it's really amazing science. But and this country actually pioneered it, really, like in the late 70s. But basically, what it is the woman takes all this kind of medication to heighten, you know, during her cycle, the amount of eggs that she kind of creates in her womb. And the thing is that so women kind of have a finite number of eggs they have in their lifetime. I didn't know this, right? And every month they generally kind of between cycles have one or two eggs kind of thing that get created. And but during IVF, these drugs that what a woman takes, basically like I said, you get a concentrated amount of eggs in that one kind of menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
And so it's about firstly doing that, and then there's egg collection. So they, once that's done, you go to the clinic, they collect the eggs, and then they mix them with your sperm to create embryos outside in a kind of petri dish, right, in the lab. And then those embryos kind of fertilize, and after a few days you get kind of embryos that are ready to be reimplanted into the woman to then, you know, hopefully get them pregnant.
So it's quite a kind of involved process, particularly for the woman.
Definitely, yeah, exactly. That whole process to kind of recreate that cycle where you get as many eggs as possible involves lots of injections, lots of drugs. Yeah, it's just a miracle how it kind of works, and I don't really know the science behind it, but that kind of is possible. And
so, just going back to you were sort of saying about your particular experience. So you harvested the eggs and stuff and went through the process.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
So we've been through two rounds of IVF. So the first one we went through, sassed the drugs and everything else, and then we collected 11 eggs and then mixed it with my sperm, and then we had three embryos, and then we put one in and she was pregnant, but then miscarried. And then that was a few weeks later.
Right.
And then, you were talking about the scan initially. And at that point, you know, we were so excited she was pregnant. We were sure it was going to work as well.
I mean,
we didn't even think of the idea of miscarriage didn't come across our minds, actually. And that's another big topic, right? Because actually there's so many miscarriages that I mean, I think the stats we were told 1 in 3, I've heard 1 in 4, whatever, couples go through an experience. I know loads of couples who do, and often people don't talk about it, right?
So yeah,
it's,
sure.
Yeah. It's especially the... Yeah, it's the same with IVF. People don't talk enough about it, but they are more every day, more and more, you know, people. And that's, you know, that's a great thing about this podcast, I think, is that, you know, people, these things, because it can only help, right, to discuss things.
100%, yeah.
So we went in for that scan. It was after seven weeks.
Is that what it is? Is that it's 7 weeks right, after you have the
so
IVF?
So you have more scans, I guess, when you
Yeah. There's a lot of scans. Yeah, exactly. But sorry, just to come back, when you do that whole egg collection and then you reimplant, if they're pregnant on that day, you're one month in, basically.
Oh, right. Wow. So they've already had a month in the Petri dish.
Exactly. Well, it's only a few days.
No, but yes. in their, you know, relatively.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So you're kind of a month pregnant at that point. And so then you wait a few more weeks, only 3 more weeks, for example. And then you have your 7 week scan. And we went in and there was no heartbeat. And then and then it started dawning on us, actually, you know, she's miscarried, right? And that is... that's a massive head fuck. And also the other thing about IVF, it's very statsy, yeah? So you literally, when you're in the clinic, you're going to talk to the doctor, he'll input your age, your you know, your wife's age, the quality of your sperm, et cetera, et cetera. And they'll give you a number, like what percentage chance you have of conceiving.
Right. Wow.
Off a fresh cycle, i.e. when they implant, just when the embryo has been created, as opposed to frozen, because the stats are higher than when they freeze the embryo. So what happens is we put one in and then we froze two embryos, right?
Yeah.
And as soon as you freeze them, then the stats go down to then conceive later on down the line.
And
right?
How long can you keep them frozen for?
For years. For really? Years. Yeah. Wow. For years.
Yeah.
Often people implant two or from a fresh cycle to give themselves the best chance, actually.
Yeah.
Because again, the stats are better from a fresh cycle.
Yeah.
And then you obviously have to accept the fact that you may have twins.
Go back. So we've already sort of discussed that it's quite an involved process for the woman.
Yeah.
For the man, you know, that what...
You have to go and give sperm, right?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Is this the first time you've done that? Given sperm.
Yeah, I don't know why I was thinking about that.
In a medical way.
Yes, it was. I'm just trying to think. I can't remember if I had to do it before to analyse it. But yeah, no, you go in a little room and you know, you've got to have a wank, basically. And,
yeah.
I've done it twice because for each round you got to do it. Yeah,
and it was. I mean, how's it? Does it, what was it must the, be quite a weird experience.
It is a bit weird. Obviously, it is quite surreal. You're in this room, but I think you know it's. It,
what was the porn like?
Well, that's the first time I didn't use any. I didn't even know that it was porn there the first time.
So you just used the wank bank.
Yeah, exactly. My wank bank's full, and you know it's. I was gonna say it's thriving there, but no. I mean, and then obviously, then the second time I did notice the pedestal, and there was some in there. But the thing is, it's almost seedier, kind of, not seedier. It's kind of dirty touching it, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't really need it. So.
So it was just magazines. There wasn't like a video or anything.
No, just magazines. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Kind of weird ones as well. I mean, not weird, but it's just a bit. It seemed a bit 80s, I guess. I think. I think to seem to remember. But yeah, no. Both times I just kind of.
Oh, must have been really encrusted.
Nowadays it's all online, right? I mean, you.
I don't know.
So they don't have like a computer set up.
No, they don't. It's all proper magazines, which is
you bring in your login details.
80s or 90s.
Chrome incognito window set up. But you don't need it there. You don't need an incognito window.
No, it's just you can go on.
It's legit. It's been one legitimate time.
They've got bookmarks. It's fine. Yeah. You just go through.
You didn't have a problem.
No.
Because
no.
I imagine some people would sort of, you know, freeze up a little bit at the prospect of having to beat off in a room. with someone standing outside waiting.
Yeah.
Sort of knocking on the door. Sorry, there's someone else out here. Can you hurry up?
I'll tell you what went through my mind. It's just, this is, and I don't know if you can include this actually, but I'll just say it and you can decide later. But
we're definitely including
it. No. But they,
Tom, write this down.
So, because you're doing it, and obviously, the thing is, they give you a little cup to kind of put it in. And the thing is, I wasn't going to, you know, aim at the cup type thing. So I just, you know.
What were you going to do? Just like squirt on the floor and then like
No. You know, just on my kind of stomach and then kind of scoop it up. I think. But what went through my mind?
Jesus.
But that's got to be normal, no? That's got to be normal, no? I don't know.
I'll tell you
what went through my mind.
That's normal for like a normal wank, but like for like a clinical wank, surely you have to try to get it all in the cup.
No, but I did. That was a second step for me kind of thing. It was right. Just do a normal wank and then just, you know, scoop it up. But what was going through my mind was that I had deodorant on, right? And I was thinking, is the deodorant going to mess with the sperm?
I actually wrote
it on the form. They asked you, there's a bit on the form. It says to you, you know, was there anything wrong with it when you wank kind of process? And I wrote deodorant. Like, is that going to tamper with, you know, the sperm and actually might affect things when it's mixed with the egg? So, I mean, it was a bit of a crazy thought to go through, really.
You could end up with, like, some kind of, like, kind of superhero baby that like smells really fresh.
That's right,
like, always.
And the funny thing is, I think I told Sass, right? And this is literally the only thing the guy has to do right, like, the only thing he has to get right. And I think I told her the deodorant thought that went through my mind, which they told me it was ridiculous to think that, whatever. But she was disappointed, I think, for a second. She was like, oh, for fuck's sake, you can't even get that right, kind of thing. Because it's true, everything else is on the woman, really. So again, you guys were talking about it the other day, how unfair the process is.
I wanted to ask you specifically about the time that you kind of, when you were locked outside of your house as a little kid, because it just ties into this story.
In terms of you asking if I have a problem wanking, you know, I said, yeah, one, I mean, when I was a kid and I was locked out of my house, I just had a wank, basically, because I was waiting for the...
You had a wank
on your doorstep?
Yeah, on my doorstep, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But again, I mean...
was it
that's obviously not normal. I didn't realise that.
No, I don't know if it's not normal.
I was a bit bored. And
I think it was brazen.
It was
not busy, too busy a street then? Like,
it wasn't, no. And it was when you're very, you know, when you're very young, as you just... I must have been maybe 14, 15, and you're just kind of wanking a lot, right?
Right, yeah. Well,
So you're kind of experimenting, I guess. And it just happened, really.
You thought, can I get away with this?
Yeah, and the thing is, it's...
That is...
My mate used to do this, who shall remain nameless, used to do something called the danger wank, which was he'd be upstairs in his room, and then he'd just shout, Mom, can you come up here? And then he'd have to try and finish she came up into the bedroom.
No way.
So weird.
That's also quite wrong, because you just said your
exactly
mum, you know... Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. His mum was quite fit, to be fair.
I mean, you could do a whole...
I'm joking.
Really taken this down into the gutter. That's dangerous, because, like,
that's
you know,
exactly,
like, the dad could be walking past just at the same time. And right, think, don't worry, I've got this. And then, yeah.
And then he said, the danger wank. Oh,
right,
carry on, son.
Okay. I've taught you well. Like, I didn't know this, that you can take your partner potentially into the... wanking room.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
To facilitate the...
Yeah. I didn't know either. Seth told me, yeah. And yeah, you can, I guess. And that's, you know, probably quite a good help for, you know, for those that... And
probably, you say that, like, it's probably just easier just to get it done. Do you know
what
I mean? Like,
just go, I've got this.
Totally.
Don't worry.
This is my...
I know what works. I'll be out in 5 minutes. It's fine.
Less than that, yeah.
You're just going to muddle things and just... It doesn't... This is unnecessary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So yeah, I just wanted to go back to what you were saying about the first time that you tried the IVF, and obviously you had the miscarriage.
Yeah.
And then, but you had two frozen embryos.
Exactly. So you got two frozen embryos, and I was like, oh, well, this is great, because you could just literally, you go back into the clinic and they put one back in. It's really quite easy. But obviously, like I was saying, the stats are not as good for getting pregnant then. So we did one, it didn't take, and then we waited another month or something, and we did the other one, it didn't take either. And then at that point, you were like, oh, shit, you got to go through another cycle again, which...
So you, but you were kind of like, you know, certain that you, like, this is what we're going to do it again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was no doubt. I mean, there's obviously there's a financial element to it.
Right, so you paid for it privately.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, paid for it privately. I mean, mainly because you don't want to waste any time, actually. And also the funding, I mean, it's very inconsistent throughout the country about funding. It's a whole minefield in itself. I think some boroughs or constituencies kind of fund one round of IVF, and then if you have a child, they won't fund a second one.
Right.
And some boroughs don't fund it at all. But the point is, because Elise was there, we didn't even look into it really, because we just wanted to get on with it. And I think, you know, if you go down the NHS route, which obviously most people do, but you haven't got time on your side. I think that's one of the kind of sad things, really. So, but because we just want to crack on for it, we went privately.
And I think you kind of obviously you and like Saskia took the decision to like really like sort of take it super seriously.
Yeah.
And Sass like quit her job basically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Because it's quite, like you were saying, there's a lot of scans, like literally every other day or something, you're going in for a scan while you're doing the injections and going through the round. It's quite a toll on the woman as well. And Sass was working, so she would have to kind of take longer lunch breaks, etc. It's just really, and it's kind of emotionally and psychologically.
Not conducive, is it?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly the right word. I mean, it's exactly, you want to be in the right frame of mind, everything. And so, yeah, second round, we just thought, you know what, let's do this, apply ourselves even more. And she quit her...
It's just a real commitment to do that.
Yeah, I mean, we were really fortunate that she could do that, if I'm honest. I mean, like, I think it's hard if you... You know, it's hard enough as it is, but we were lucky. We were very... I mean, we always consider ourselves very lucky. But, yeah, so she did quit her job. And yeah, was just a lot more focused as well on her diet. She was reading a lot more about it and, like, kind of vitamins she was taking. And acupuncture is a big thing as well that helps. So all these kind of soft things that the clinic doesn't tell you, because they're really wary about telling you stuff like that, actually, because they're really about the science and the stats. Again, they don't want to give you false hope or whatever. But, I mean, they do point you a bit in the right direction, but this stuff does help. And actually, Sass, the second round, managed to get 16 eggs. Right.
Okay. Wow. Is that a lot? Is that, like, higher than average?
Yeah, I mean, she was, you know, 30, 36. So, it's, you know, and like I said, the older, these numbers only going one way. They're only going downhill, right? So it is a bit of a race against the time. And so, yeah, it was, I think that's not that normal, really, to have. But because, like I said, she applied herself, and there's a lot in that. Kind of
did you have to do anything special? Like, no. Do you have to, like, you know, I mean, I'm sure you're a healthy man, but you don't smoke or anything
you don't actually as a man at all, really. I mean, you get your sperm checked and, you know, that was fine. And
how I was mean, that
yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, I'm laughing, but it's not, you know, that's the thing. And I think that's why one of the issues, sorry, come back on this, is why couples don't talk that openly about IVF. Often it's because something isn't right in the couple, either it's the woman or it's the man, you know, there's something, or just together it's not clicking.
Yeah.
It's a lot. I mean, Sass had her tubes removed, so there is no option but to have, we didn't have an option.
And this was before you guys met.
Exactly. She exactly.
In fact, that's how Elise was conceived.
Exactly, yeah. So we've always been quite open about talking about this, and I think we're quite, it's easy for us to do that. I think if my sperm count was low, I mean, I like to think I'd be fine about talking about it, but it's true that there are these preconceived kind of social pressures almost, or, you know, that make it difficult. And it just doesn't help anyone not talking about these things. Cause
like shooting blanks and things like that, all that kind of stuff. Kind of jokes people throw.
That's right.
School playground. Not a school playground, perhaps. That's usually right. A bit
like, going around the school playground talking about sperm much or not?
No.
Okay.
But that's the thing, is infertility. It's a disease, actually, and it impacts one in six couples. And it's really, it affects them.
Well, it has a real stigma to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because like, it's sort of like supposed to be, you know, your biological kind of, like, it's what we're built for, right? Isn't it? To reproduce. So that's, you know, that's what we're kind of brought up to sort of believe or think.
It's and nature.
So,
yeah, it's nature.
So if you can't perform the most sort of fundamental...
And it's true. The amount of times guys, you know, when their missus gets pregnant, they're like, we're first time, you know, super sperm. Exactly. Yeah, I know a few people actually. It wasn't for me. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's totally, you're totally right. There is definitely that stigma and that kind of like.
But I think, yeah, exactly. And I think it is about luck, really. I mean, you can be unlucky and just have something not quite right with you or whatever.
Mm.
And it's not fair that, I'm not saying society makes fun of it, but I think
people. I think they do.
Yeah,
I think
they do maybe. And, yeah. But at least people who are going through that probably feel that they do and therefore can't talk about it as openly.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And that you know, contributes to people not being able to conceive naturally. Just the anxiety of like, you know, the social kind of anxiety or
totally.
Pressure.
I think you're right. I think it might delay things. And again, a lot of this is a race against time. So it might delay, you know, talking about it more openly, finding new things. Like there's, I think there are kits now you could buy online for just to test your sperm, for example, at home. You know, if you think that something's not working, because you might be going down, except doing something and it's not working for however long and not getting it checked out or whatever. And that's the thing, is often we don't seek advice soon enough because we're sure we know better or whatever.
And it's one of those things that, like, you know, you get to a certain stage where it's kind of like you don't have many options left and you think, well, if I just talked or just dealt with this or just asked about it sort of a little bit sooner, you know, and then you're in a position where it's too late. So,
yeah.
I just wanted to kind of cut in there with an interesting statistic. Actually, I've got no, like, way of verifying whether this is true.
Dr. Seth back in the building.
No. Yep. Which is that after the first IVF baby, if people have an IVF baby, or a child via IVF, the second child is often conceived naturally, which is kind of goes back to what we're talking about, because the pressure is sort of off then.
Because it's done. You've had the first child and you think,
it sort of suggests that it's that social pressure.
Yeah.
That,
I mean, I it's funny, I know three couples exactly that's happened to, right?
Really? Wow. Yeah,
they for trying for a couple of years, where they're struggling, did IVF, and then kind of, and sometimes it fixes something in the woman or something gets flushed out, or whatever. Like it might, but it's, and the second one was conceived naturally, and
amazing. There's companies sort of that you can go to, like in Barbados, who basically run sort of like retreats for people who are trying to conceive through IVF, and it's all like catered to being like super chilled, super relaxing. You kind of just go there, you have a holiday, but you go through the IVF process there, so it is like not a hospital but like a clinic, but it's in the form of retreats, and their success rate is ridiculous, like because everyone goes there super chilled, not working, not the stresses of life, you know, eating well, doing all that, and it goes to show. It goes,
I wonder if people go there and whilst they're there they conceive naturally, because wild every night.
But not with their partner.
No, yeah, exactly. Sorry, I conceived naturally, but unfortunately it's with this lovely lady.
I got smashed last night and didn't know where I ended up, and
so I can't remember whether we touched on this before, but so with the second round, you decided, so with the first round that you tried, you went for one embryo and you froze two.
Exactly.
The second time round, you decided to
put two in,
put two in, because it increases the chances.
Exactly. Like, I didn't clock onto this, and I should normally kind of working in numbers and stuff. I just didn't clock.
Well, that's what the trouble we've got in this country is, you don't think, do you?
That's right.
Do you know what I mean?
But it's that I was like, hang on a minute, we've got a better success rate from a fresh cycle, we should put two in. But then also we were a bit further down the line, and we were both more willing to have twins, because
it's two the maximum. I guess it's two.
No,
maximum.
No, you could put more in. You could put more, but the clinics generally they discourage you even putting two in, because having twins is actually gets quite risky for the mother to conceive. But then again, people feel that they haven't got enough time and they want to give themselves the best chance, so often they do put two in. And you can still get triplets from that because one can split or whatever. But we put two in and one took and one didn't. So actually it was, you know.
Were you scared about the possibility of twins?
No, I mean.
I can't think of anything more terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, respect to anyone who's got twins, but God. Yeah. Respect, basically. That's all I've got to say about that.
So, Jerry, you guys were lucky enough to be able to afford to do the IVF treatment privately. But of course, not everybody's able to do that. So, you know, it's fortunate that people are able to in some places around the country get this kind of treatment on the NHS. Mm. But it seems like that's, I mean, I was just listening to a Women's Hour report today where they were saying that it's one of the things under the microscope, and that the various kind of CCGs, I think they're called, mm. are sort of making decisions about whether or not they cut mm. NHS in favour of, you know, other treatments, cancer treatments and stuff like that, mm-hmm. which, you know, seems like a terrible shame. I mean, this country pioneered the use of IVF. Mm. So, I mean, it does seem kind of desperately unfair that if you're sort of in the wrong area, you just might not be eligible to have
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Yeah, it is unfair. I think I heard that there was, you know, some people maybe even moving or considering moving to move into an area where they could get IVF on the NHS. But, I mean, it does seem very unfair, but it's just, I don't know, in that whole debate of whether funding, you know, cancer treatment over IVF, if that's a kind of a moral, kind of almost existential conversation, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, what we hope is that, you know, you don't have to make these tough decisions. I mean, yeah. no one's suggesting that we... prioritize IVF over cancer That's treatments. Right. Yeah. And like, there is I think it's fair to say, like a question about whether, you know, you can consider having IVF to be a kind of a human right in the mm. same way that maybe, you know, the right to stay alive mm-hmm. and therefore battle cancer probably is in that category.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But, you know, for some people, it's like a very real issue. It can be very sort of, you know, hard for lots of people. And you don't want to end up in a society where some people are able to, you know, reproduce and other people aren't exactly. just because they can't afford it. I mean, that's...
Yeah. And like you said, because we pioneered it as well, we should be championing it kind of around the world. And yeah, at the minute, it isn't like that. But then again, you know, it's...
did it actually cost you to
Yeah, so it cost about 8,000 or something.
Right,
is okay. that per...
Round
per round, so yeah. you get if in that round you get three embryos, yeah. you freeze two, and then you yeah. come back and use that embryo.
It's, yeah, then
that's included in the.
Yeah, I mean, there's a fee for the implant, but not it's not that much. And also, freezing the embryos does cost. But it's like £100 a year or something. Mm. So the real bulk of the cost is in the medication and round all the scans harvesting. And everything else in that. Yeah, in that month exactly, in the harvesting in the lab and all that kind of stuff.
So basically. You know, what we're saying on this podcast is, you know, put more money into the NHS, yeah. government.
So Saskia actually now, so she runs a, is it consultancy, would you say?
Yeah, it's a website, mainly because she felt that there wasn't enough information about infertility. And a lot of it, it's all about infertility, but there's a massive part, which is IVF and kind of tips and help on her website. And,
What's the name of the website?
Mybeehive.co.uk. And her Instagram account is IVF and Proud. And,
yeah, I
and,
saw that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. It's and the cool. hashtag IVF and Proud as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that's right. And she's got these little baby tops she's designed with a little kind of chicken that's pulling a little egg kind of thing. Wicked. And it's true. It's just to be proud of it and not kind of... I'm not saying people are ashamed, but just they don't necessarily always talk about it that much. But yeah, just to be proud of that. And it's becoming, it really is, just another way of conceiving and becoming a lot more normalised, as it should be. And actually another big part of this, which we haven't really touched on, is actually, because a lot of people entrust a lot of hope and faith into IVF, for example, and it doesn't always work for everyone. Like, as in, there are lots of instances where they've gone through multiple rounds, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 rounds, and they're just not going to conceive. And
yeah.
And that is quite tragic in itself, obviously, but it's about dealing with that as well.
So what else has been going on? What's been going on with Eliza then?
But so is Eliza still sleeping in your room?
She is still sleeping in the room, yeah, yeah. It's funny because we were thinking about, well, before she was born, like, you know, you have these kind of conversations about how long they should stay in your room and stuff. And our NCT teacher had said, you know, you really should keep them in your room for at least 3 months, but you know ideally longer. And she was very adamant. She was quite open-minded about lots of things. She was very adamant about that. She said, no, you have to do it. And there were other people in the class who said that they were thinking about giving the baby its own room almost straight away. And she was like, no, you can't do that. Do you even know why you do it? And she sort of, you know, proceeded to explain that, you know, they are very, like, you basically being in the same room with you helps them learn how to breathe. Like, hearing you breathe sort of helps them learn how to breathe, and it kind of reduces things like cot death and stuff, not to be too morbid. So for all those reasons, we were, well, we're definitely going to have her in there for a while, but like we'll see after 3 months. Mm. But she's, and again, touch wood, she's been a very, very good sleeper. Yeah. So,
but she's up in the night, I guess.
She gets up once.
Wow.
She like, normally gets up once cat. In the night. We'll put her down at like 11.
Yeah.
She'll get up maybe at like 5 or 6.
Yeah, like my cat. Wow.
You know, there are bad days and stuff where it's not, it doesn't work so well. But no, generally it's like really, it's really good. So
yeah,
yeah, so we don't really, we've got no plans to kind of kick her out into her own room yet. Jamie, so what else is going on with you and Nat at the moment?
Well, you know, we had our 20-week scan, obviously, and I mean, we're not far away from being a third trimester. I mean, legit, time has flown, and it's kind of like freaked us both out a little bit that it's sort of like really, you know, just over 3 months to go, whereas everything was a bit of a, you know, a distant thing. I could put it to the back of my mind, not back of my mind, but kind of go, yeah, but that's miles away. Do you know what I mean? Whereas now it's kind of like, oh no, things are, you know, the fact that we're painting the nursery and like next weekend or whatever, and that's like, you know, everyone, loads of our friends were saying, so let's go to this thing, let's go for dinner, let's go pie, and we had to say no, we can't actually, because we're painting the spare room nursery. So
what
yeah, we've got that planned,
a neutral color, a
gray, like gray. A light gray. Yeah, we're gonna do a light gray with white and a bit of yellow, like as in yellow not on the walls but like yellow bits and bobs around the place, just to kind of, we found some nice things on Pinterest which we liked, yeah, and right. We kind of like, you know, want to copy them. But you know what we did do, and this is quite, went to Farrow and Ball to get the paint samples,
right,
gonna decide which one, then just go home base and get them to mix it up the same color.
Great.
For like a, like yeah, no yeah, money yeah. at all.
Cornforth white is a good one.
No, ours is elephant breath.
Oh right.
Yeah, elephant
like
breath.
Elephant, like that's honestly gone. I tell you what, right, this is hilarious. Go on the Farrow and Ball website and just look at the names they give their paints.
It's true.
It's like a mole sigh, like rabbit blink.
Yeah.
And is like, that actually true?
Mole yeah, sigh. Yeah, I swear. There's definitely something about mole. I don't know, but elephant breath is 100% because we've got the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's like just ridiculous, like mole fart or something like they're so pretentious. But I think they're having a bit of a laugh with them as well, some of them. But then you just go home base and just go, yeah, I want that colour, and they'll mix it up for you. And it's, but you like, know, again, 10th of the price.
What you were saying about the DIY, I mean, I'm useless, I can't drill a thing. And to the point where now, you know, even Elise, when there's something that needs putting up, basically there's a handyman called Seymour that we get round every so often. And so when it's just like literally like a like a frame to put up, you know, Elise will go, oh, let's get Seymour round, you know, and I'm just standing there like, you know, completely...
Mate, the worst is when Nat says to me, when I'm halfway through doing it, and I'm like... Oh, do you know what? This is actually a lot tougher than I thought. And I look at it and I'm measuring it up and I'm kind of going, but I can do it. And I was like, oh, it's not going in. Nat will just turn to me and go, should we phone your dad? And I'm telling you, there nothing gets me more angry than that, because he would just come around and go, yeah, you've got to do it like this. Yeah, bang, 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 done. Whereas I'm there kind of going, okay, and what's the square root of 7? Because then that's how far it needs to be from the wall.
You see, because I'm a bit like that as well. Like I, you know, I'm not a great, I'm not terrible, but I'm not great at doing DIY.
Yeah.
But I quite like getting my dad round. I quite like him sort of taking some of the burden.
Yeah.
It sort of backfired the last time when we were putting up the shelves in the baby room. He mismeasured something. So the shelves that were supposed to be dead on the center, like he did all the precise measurements and stuff. Okay, and put them up. And I was like, hang on a minute. Those aren't in the middle of the wall. They're all over to the side. And he was like, oh, well, I definitely measured it up. And then turned out that, like, well,
obviously
he'd mismeasured something.
Yeah.
It was a complete disaster.
Yeah, my dad, I built a shed the other day on my own, and that was quite a triumph. And I didn't get my dad round, although I probably should have done, because one of the doors doesn't really open. But yeah, like when you, and it's a bit of a project, your dad comes around and does it. I totally get that. But I just feel really inadequate, because I just sit there and go, do you want me to pass you that drill bit?
No, what you need to do, mate, is learn.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing.
That's still, dads are still useful.
Yeah, it's true.
This is one of the reasons why we do this. We're useful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I'm just worried the first time someone's going to ask me to change a plug, because I still don't know how to do that.
Oh, no.
But apparently, you know
what? You mean like unplug something and plug something else in?
Like change a plug when a plug's fused or whatever. Yeah, I know, right. Okay. Anyway, so, but you know, apparently, you know what's wicked for tips like that? For anyone out there, dads, anyone, mum's net. Mum's Net apparently is amazing for like how to DIY. Check the plug, how to because it's, you know, for like just basics, like, you know, your radiator's leaking, how to bleed the radiator.
That's true.
Just go on Mum's Net.
How to unblock a sink. I was on there the other day for unblocking a sink.
There we go.
Yeah.
Big up Mum's Net again.
So talking about, you know, what dads can kind of bring to the table.
Yeah.
Jamie, like, what's the latest dad tech you've been looking at?
Oh, so this is the time for dad tech.
This is dad tech time.
Papa's got a brand new bag. So this week, I'm going to feature something which isn't really tech, but it's cool for dads and mums as well. But it's a set of albums by a company called Rockabye Baby. And you can go to their website, which is rockabyebabymusic.com. And basically, it's a load of albums of rock and, I guess, indie artists, but redone and recomposed in the style of lullabies for your for your kids. What they say on their website is that, in short, Rockabye Baby makes rock music baby-friendly and kids' music adult-friendly. So it's quite interesting, actually.
Good.
And
good little tagline.
Yeah, and I got a couple of albums for Christmas from my parents. And then I kind of thought, well, what else are there? I got a David Bowie one and a White Stripes one. And it's really cool because like, all the, like, it's your favourite tracks by these artists. Yeah. And yeah, I think my favourites are like Radiohead. There's like some really good Radiohead ones there.
Yeah.
And the Nirvana ones are cool. The Metallica ones are wicked. Because it's proper still got the melody.
Yeah.
But it's you know, you could easily put your baby to sleep. And if you're in the room with them at the time,
you can rock out.
You can just kind of like kind of go, oh, this is kind of cool.
That's
like,
a great idea.
Yeah, it's
because
really
there's because a lot of the normal classical lullabies, they're a bit wank, really, aren't
And you
they?
Know something them like, off by heart. Yeah. You like can go crazy with them.
And they're a bit. Some of them are meaningless.
Yeah,
I mean, some of the songs. Radio song the meaningless.
But I mean, Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, and that's the same fucking composition as Bar Bar Black Sheep. Yeah. So they're having us there.
Exactly. You know what I mean?
So again, that's rockabyebabymusic.com. I hear actually that you, Jerry, had an idea for a bit of tech with the drippy cock and your solution on that. Is that a bit of dad tech?
Hang on. No.
Guess dad tech.
Is it dad tech? No, I mean...
That sounds gross, first of all.
Yeah,
what
but please...
Is it?
All right, it all came about because a friend of mine was saying how drippy cock, it was a term that he made up for when he goes to the urinal and, you know, there's a bit of remnants left. And, you know, when he's finished, he puts his penis back in his boxers and inevitably there's a few droplets that come out.
Yeah.
And I was like, actually, that happens to me. And I was like, yeah, this is quite a common thing, actually. And people don't really talk about it much. But yeah, then I thought it might be a good idea to kind of redesign the boxer short totally, you know, and invent a boxer short that kind of dealt with that, you know, somehow had some padding there. And
so you're talking about some kind of absorbent thing to soak up the piss so that you essentially have pads that are like
soaked in piss.
I know, yeah, when put like that, it does sound properly rank, yeah.
But can you change the lining? Is it like disposable?
I mean, look, I
you haven't fleshed out the details.
You have not thought this through.
I did build a prototype.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, it did. Well, Sass kind of lent me one of her Tampax, basically, and put it on my boxer short and carried it for me for the day, and it worked a treat, actually. But I kind of got laughed off a lot. But I thought it was.
I'm surprised.
I thought it wasn't a bad idea, to be honest. And we even had a name for it. It was Drip Dry Boxer Shorts.
Now I'm in. The fact that you've got a name for it, now I'm sold.
Just kind of surveying you two, is this something you've experienced or not really?
No.
The condition, drippy cock.
I just sort of make sure that I give it a good old, you know, shake.
As much as you shake and dance, some will always end up on your pants.
There you go. There's even a saying. I didn't even know that saying. There's
I can't remember
there.
I heard that.
But that's the thing. You could spend however long, a minute, trying to get it all out. And then invariably, just like...
You know what? I kind of think that piss isn't that bad, really.
Yeah,
it is. You know, piss is like sterile, isn't it? So like, you're not going to...
unless you're wearing chinos, and then it shows, and it does, it can go through,
and it's just a bit uncomfortable.
Okay, yeah, well that's not ideal.
But that means if it goes through your boxers and then onto your chinos, that's just you pissing yourself. As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it for this most recent episode of The Good, The Dad and The Ugly, the fatherhood podcast. I want to say thank you to Jerry for coming on and talking so candidly about the IVF.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's obviously a very sensitive topic, and it's really important that obviously, you know, people come on things like this and share their experiences to kind of hopefully help other people feel comfortable about it. So thank you again.
Yeah, and actually on that note, if people want to find out more about IVF and infertility, the fertilitynetwork.org is a great resource, so go check that out. And obviously also mybeehive.co.uk has loads of really great information and help there. So yeah, go check that out, definitely.
And thank you, obviously, importantly, to everybody at home who's listening to the podcast.
Keep
subscribing and downloading and rating and reviewing and all that stuff. And of course, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Just search for @gooddadugly on either or both, and you'll find us. And also, we have an email address. It's gooddaduglypod@gmail.com. And if you have any questions or suggestions for topics or anything comments. Like that, or comments, yeah, you want to send us all that great feedback.
Free stuff.
Yeah, all of that. Get in touch.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.